Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Did you like the new sound? That was the new opening of the show sound.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, good morning. How's that not good? Come on, man. I'm playing with my toy, Mark Riley.
Why?
What? Because look at, I can do, some days it's just, you know, it's like,
you just like to blow things up.
What's the problem? Yeah, I do sometimes, you know. I'm actually very awake, but I'm kind of buzzed out because I hosted with Lewis.
With Lewis Black. Last night, man, I listened to you. I'm amazed you got in here as early as you did this morning. Man, I was all set to say, oh, man, Maron's going to be late.
Yeah.
Man, the guy stayed up all night doing this thing with us. And you did an interview, which we're going to play later, with Barbara Boxer, the senator from California. You were just full of the juice last night,
man.
I didn't
realize that I had it in me, man, but I was just like, wah, you know, and Lewis, it was weird when he got a guy like Lewis Black where he's like, geez, where'd that come from? He literally said that. We're sitting there talking like, you know, just a couple of guys, a couple of comics before the show. I'm like,
comics kicking it.
Yeah, right, right. And all of a sudden, like, the show starts and I'm like, 6 past the hour. And he's like, what? Where did that come from? He's like, guy, you got pretty good at this. Now, Kayla, what is there a problem? Kayla, the Costco host, giving me the what do you call it?
Evil eye?
A little bit of the evil eye, a little bit of the gas face.
Well, you know, at like 6 o'clock all yesterday, right. Yeah. I was taking a nice little walk, and I was pissed off at Mark Maron.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really pissed off.
I'm right here. Why don't you just say I'm pissed off at you?
Dude.
I'm right here. You don't have to talk about me in the third person.
Well, you know, I was walking with my iPod, and I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Why do I have to take crap from Mark Maron about me having an iPod?
Right, right.
Because I want to listen to Iggy Pop's Passenger while I'm on 86th Street walking to 68th Street.
Yeah.
Why is that so wrong?
No, you're right. Okay, well, here's where you made a mistake is that, look, I'm not, you know, okay, maybe I'm judging you a little bit, but yeah, the battle I'm going through with the iPod is that I don't want to be that detached all the time. Look, I used to, you know, man, I spent
detached.
My life. Yes.
Look, I'm definitely attached to myself. I'm thinking. I'm proactive in my life.
You're
you
feeling.
Know?
What you're doing is you're letting the music, you know, sort of guide the ebb and flow of your of your brain chemicals. And you know, and okay, no, I understand. I'm being a purist, like, and I might even be lying to myself about this sort of like the present thing. All right, I'm not taking that away from you. I'm just fighting my own fight against the iPod because I went into Apple. Okay, I went in there the other night. Did I already talk about this with you?
No.
I went in there the other night. I'm in Soho.
Gorgeous.
Wait a minute. Did you go specifically to go there, or were you walking down a street in Soho, and suddenly the Apple store said, Mark.
Exactly. Come on in, Mark.
Come in, Mark.
Feel your friends. Come on and see your new friends. No, the courting has begun. Okay, that's what's happening here. And I do this with merchandise. I'll go visit it a few times.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've done this. You know what I did this with?
Yeah.
This watch. The watch I have on my wrist right now.
Yeah.
I used to walk by and see it in the window of this store not far from here.
Yeah.
And it used to say, hey, you know you want it.
Yeah. You know? Oh, guess what time it is?
Little by little. Yeah, and then I did a really rotten thing and traded it a perfectly good watch my wife had gotten me.
Oh, did she know this?
Yeah, I couldn't help it.
You get attached to things,
yeah.
You know? So I go in, Kayla, I go into Apple, and I know what's going on. I'm making excuses for myself because I don't have a stereo here. I got these, you know, high-end Bose computer speakers, and they're hooked up to my TV that's hooked up to a switch box from Radio Shack, and I don't got a receiver or anything like that. And I got a DVD player that I got to put one CD in at a time and listen to the whole CD or just flip around with songs, which is archaic. Who the hell does that anymore? Okay.
It's very 20th century, yes.
All right,
here we go, 20th century.
So I go into iPod, you know, and I'm looking at these things. And, you know, Apple, the Apple Store, it's almost like you're in a spaceship.
It's like it's a virtual reality. I mean, it's like being in virtual reality, but you're actually in it.
Yeah, it's like 2001.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Can I help?
Yeah, exactly. Like by the iPod boys.
Yep.
And I'm looking at iPods, and I'm starting to think, you know, and I look, he's playing with it. See how he's playing with it with his thumb? And
yeah.
Like, so I pick up the iPod, and it's not even a song I like. I don't even remember what song it is. I think it was like Phil Collins or something is on the rotation, right? But I got the speakers on, and right when it starts, I'm like, wow, this is great. This is like the best. Like, it was literally like my brain, like I got a rush. Like my brain got all sweet inside.
They all planned it this way.
And then you play with the little thing, the little circle. It's like, oh man, this is fun. And look at what I'm making happen on the screen. Look at all the choices and things. And this one has pictures. Because I know myself. You're talking to a guy, Chris. You know, the battle I'm fighting, and I think it's a battle that many of us fight when we judge other people, is the battle against ourselves. You're talking, you know me. I bought a Dyson. I went out. I got nothing in my apartment.
So it's not like you've got a problem with technology.
No, not just technology, but I'll go out and buy the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, just because.
The one the British guy advertised. Is he British?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I got nothing in my apartment but two rugs and three cats, and I got to get the best vacuum ever. You know, and that's all I have in the apartment. So now, like, if I get the iPod and people come over, I got nothing on the walls over there. It's like, well, what are you doing here? Well, I got Dyson and an iPod. I'm all set. What else do I need? All right, you know,
be a babe magnet with a Dyson.
Yeah. Hey, you want to see my vacuum? Come on, I'll show
watch
you my
it
vacuum.
Suck this sofa into the chamber over here. It's incredible.
But the thing about the iPod is, like, I don't want to get in the habit. I like being on the train and not having the distraction. I like, you know, hearing people and seeing people and trying to figure out what they're up to and kind of feeling what's going on in the train. I'll read a book occasionally, but I like being awake and alert. But I understand when you're out at night walking by yourself, you want to get the vibe going.
But you know what? When I'm on the subway and I want to listen to music, guess what? I can listen to the iPod. And you know what? When I'm on the subway, I don't always listen to the iPod.
Yeah.
You know, why are you yelling at me?
Why are you yelling at me like I just attacked you somehow?
I was really mad yesterday.
You're mad at me because, okay, so you were listening to me thinking like, this is Mark Maron, I kind of respect what this guy has to say. And then all of a sudden you had that weird moment where you're like, hey, screw that guy.
Yeah, you know, he's wrong.
Hey, wait a minute, Chris, were you walking on the streets of Bay Ridge or were you down by the Verrazano?
No, I was down in Bay Ridge.
In Bay Ridge, on the street.
Yeah.
Well, see, with an iPod on the streets of Bay Ridge, it creates a different reality. Man, you have to do this.
No, I know that creates a different reality. Believe me, I spent like 3 or 4 years where I would wake up in the morning, smoke a little ganj, put on my Walkman, and spend the entire day in space. All right, I did that for years, and I loved it.
Ooh, I used to go to college.
Yeah, I used to go to the gym like that with the iPod, and I used to just love it because it was like I was completely insulated, and it felt great, and I had my own world going, my own soundtrack, and I dug it. But for some reason, maybe it's just out of laziness. Maybe I'm just being stubborn. Maybe I'm just being stubborn, but for some reason, I feel that it distracts me from the organic existence of being a person in one of the last great cities on this planet where people have to be around people all the time. I'm proud to be an organic person among organic people in the huge body that is New York City. I want to do an active part. I don't want to detach as some sort of strange, self-righteous, malignant cell.
But that's not it. It's Apple, Mark. Apple has determined that you can shut out all there is great about a great city.
Oh, that's so not true.
If you love music,
what are you talking about?
If you love music,
you have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
No, I know what I'm talking about. I was listening to this stuff a long time ago.
But you know the weight of the iPod. Even when you pick the iPod up, you're like, wow, it's got a good feel to it.
I know. And they managed to figure out, Sony did it the same way with the Walkman.
Yeah, they did.
It was a seminal development in music technology.
And I was uncomfortable with it then. I remember doing jokes about when the first Walkman came out.
Yeah.
I remember doing jokes about the exact same stuff I'm doing right now. But I had a Walkman. But eventually, you know, it becomes a pain. You know, it becomes a chore. You start working for the iPod, which clearly Chris is. It's, you know, he doesn't realize that, you know, he surrendered his mind to the. You are now, you know, you know, the iPod's pimping you out is what's happening.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I'm a slave to Iggy Pop.
I like Iggy Pop.
I'm a slave to Bobby Womack. I'm a slave to all these guys. You know why? Because it's great music.
Right.
Because there's nothing wrong with listening to Passenger by Iggy Pop on the N train over the Manhattan Bridge. Literally nothing wrong with
that. I think I turned you on to that song, did I not?
Yeah, you did.
All right. So what
do you want?
All right.
What do you want? Exactly.
I love you, man, and I hope we get you back. You know what I mean? I hope
sooner or later.
That, you know. No, you know what? I think I'm glad you're having a good time. All right. It's some of us just like to think, you know, when we're hanging out and walking down the street. What? Hey, what?
Go to break.
15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
See, even now I want to listen to the whole song. Like, it's in my head, and I know if I had an iPod, I'd be listening to it. Iggy! 20 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. Last night I was on Randy Rhoads' show with Louis Black, you know, talking the talk, hanging out, talking about comedy. But we did get to talk to Senator Barbara Boxer of California, who is a hero to us here, and I'm very impressed with her, and was very excited to talk to her. So we have that interview for you. If I can be honest with you, you know, we were going to do it on this show exclusively, but the time allowed us to do it on Randy's show. But it was really for our show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here it is from last night. Barbara Boxer, myself, and Louis Black a bit at the end.
We're very excited to talk to you because, you know, it's just so rare that you get to talk to a Democrat with chutzpah. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, I talked to Max Cleland a couple of days ago, and I want you to just listen to something really quick. Just listen to him. And we edited this, obviously, but the message is clear.
How come all these Democratic senators voted for cloture and are getting on board with this bankruptcy bill?
As Harry Reid has said, you know, you got to pick your battles.
Why can't these guys, just out of principle, you know, vote against whatever the Republicans are putting forward just to show that there's some unity?
Well, there can be unity, and it could, like you say, you got to pick your battles.
Look, you know, sporting teams go out to win every day. Why do we have to pick our battles as Democrats? Why can't we just be fighting all the time?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think some members of the Senate do fight all the time, but you know, you got to pick your battles in order to make sure that you are a viable alternative here to the Republicans, and not just oppose everything. You got to pick your battles, and the real important ones you got
to
win.
Senator Boxer, why do we have to pick our battles? Why can't we fight them everywhere?
Well, there is such a thing as battle fatigue.
Okay.
And, you know, let me just say, there isn't a day that goes by that they don't do something that's against the good of the American family.
Right.
And, you know, Max makes a point. We know that in order to win once in a while, we have to really, what Tom Daschle used to say, internalize these issues.
Yeah, but so many...
You need to know them. You don't just knee-jerk everything. You've got to do what's the most important thing. And instead of being down on us for what we don't do, you ought to be looking at some of the brave things we have done.
I do, I do.
For example, today, mm-hmm. Harry Reid went out there on the Senate steps. He had almost the entire Senate caucus behind. And we just said to the Republicans, you're power hungry. You're arrogant. And we're going to stand up and not allow you to push us aside. We're going to fight to make sure that, yes, when it comes to judges, it's a lifelong appointment. It's a large salary. It's a big pension. There's no check and balance except for the initial vote. We're going to fight to keep a 60-vote requirement. Now, it may sound that that's easy to do, but I can assure you that we are drawing a line in the sand here, and we're going to make their lives miserable.
So that's what the Democrats are waiting to do is the judiciary? What about this bankruptcy thing? How come so many guys...
We're telling the Republicans, if you dare try to weaken the rules of the Senate and say that it's just 51 votes for every judge, instead of making sure that we have our rights to say that for these lifelong appointments, they need to get 60 votes. If they dare change it, you know, we're going to be heard and we're going to make it really difficult for them to do business, because that would be overrunning, you know, our founding fathers, who said that in the Senate, you know, everybody's got a right to get up on their feet and talk for as long as they want.
Right. Now, let me just ask you, and not necessarily a personal question, but do you find yourself frustrated, you know, with your fellow Democratic senators? Do you find yourself exasperated? Do you try to get them on the same page with some of the stuff that you fight for? Like, I'm pretty amazed at how many Democratic senators voted, you know, for this bankruptcy bill, aren't you?
Well, it's a horrible bill, and it basically does this. It takes a premise that's very reasonable, which is that people should be responsible for their debts, and I grew up with that value, but it doesn't make any exceptions.
Yeah.
And how can you say that someone who is forced into bankruptcy because they served in Iraq and they lost their job, were called up in the reserves of the National Guard, they went into bankruptcy, that a judge can't take that into account? Well, the vast majority of Democrats voted for that amendment. We also, the vast majority of Democrats voted for the amendment that said if you're thrown into bankruptcy because you had a catastrophic illness, that ought to be taken into consideration. So look, do I want every single person to see the world through my eyes and your eyes?
Yes.
I'd be happier. Yeah. But we as Democrats, what we have to do, and Max is right on this point.
Oh, don't say pick your battles.
I won't say that.
Okay.
I will say we need to gather our forces very strongly. We need to have intelligent debate, and we need to take issues to the American people that they understand. And that's the truth. You know, the American people are pretty busy. With this guy in office, they have to hold down some of them 2 and 3 jobs. They have to worry about whether they can send their kid to college. They're not sitting around and paying attention to us blather about. But
right.
If we do say there are 2 or 3 big things here, such as Social Security, such as packing the courts, such as destroying our air, our water, these are the kinds of things, such as ignoring working people and not raising the minimum wage, we think that can make an impact.
Okay, but
we did every single thing,
yeah,
every single day,
yeah,
that they do, we wouldn't break through at all. That's
right, but do you foresee...
Not everybody listens to your show.
Believe me, you don't got to tell me. That was me talking to Barbara Boxer last night on Randy Rhoads' show. And you know what struck me, Riley, is that even when she's talking her talk, there's a humanness there, though. You know, you can hear she's like a sweet person. Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
but she doesn't play when it came to Condoleezza Rice, though, did she?
No. Did she talk about that?
I think that may be
coming up.
No,
okay, because I just went out to get my popcorn, and I didn't realize. I know I talked to her. I asked her about it. So look forward to that. We're going to play the second part of that interview that Louis Black and I did, where I asked her about how it felt to stand up to Condoleezza.
Yeah.
I asked her about how it felt up to stand up for electoral reform. And also I wanted to say that Louis Black is going to give us a call here on this show later in the show. So that's coming up after the break.
Right? All that and the liberal agenda.
There you go. Air America Radio.
Oh, the passenger, he rides and he rides. He sees things from under glass.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Workers.
Yeah, we're back. 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. We're going to get back to our interview with Barbara Boxer that I had last night. I'm Randy Rhoads, the show with Louis Black. Louis Black will be calling us in a little while, but first Ramon brought this in, and he was wearing what do you call those, the Indian outfit, is it a Nehru collar?
Nehru jacket.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Here is Condoleezza Rice is touring Asia this week for discussions with area leaders. Today she is in India, and Ramon brought us her Palm Pilot. 7 a.m. wake up, have traditional Indian breakfast, second thought maybe a power bar. 9 a.m. Meet with Foreign Minister K. Natwar Singh. Note, break ice by praising the traditional Indian breakfast. 9:15. To acquaint self with India's composite culture, visit Humayun's tomb in Nizamuddin East. Then call up George W. and make him giggle like a child by saying, Humayun's tomb in Nizamuddin East. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Noon, meet with opposition leader L.K. Advani at his home. Mock him for being out of power. 12:45 p.m., meet with Prime Minister Dr. Manmohan Singh. Ask if proposed Iran-India oil pipeline can be routed through Alaska. 2 p.m., meet with Todd, the guy I always end up talking to whenever I try calling my credit card company. 6 p.m., prayer time. Please, Lord, may all the non-Christians I've met today go to hell. That's Condoleezza Rice's Palm Pilot. Now back, speaking of Condoleezza Rice, I talked to Barbara Boxer about standing up to Condoleezza Rice during those hearings during her confirmation hearings, and it was exciting. It was why don't I just play it? How would that be, Chris?
Oh, you're gonna play it now?
Yeah, why don't we play it now?
Oh, okay. How great did it feel to stand up to Condi Rice like you did? Did it feel great?
I felt that I was speaking for a lot of folks.
But it was a little bit of a rush, right?
No.
No,
right. No, it was very uncomfortable.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable because she was squirming around and wouldn't answer my questions. So it was like a monologue. I wasn't having a dialogue because what she said is, Senator, I'm not going to answer this because you're just questioning my integrity. Well, I was in many ways saying you didn't speak, you know, the truth as everyone now knows it, and she refused to go there with me. So, you know, it wasn't the most pleasant time of my life. I will say I was stunned at what happened afterwards to me.
Yeah.
To get those flowers and to be thanked that way. And as I go around, even if I just traveling in an airport far away from California, thank you, Senator. You spoke for me. It was really, truly a wonderful feeling for me.
We were excited.
A little bit surprising because I was only doing my job.
It was, but you know, you're one of the only ones. You know, you're one of the only ones that actually seems to care about their constituents, to care about people, to care about the welfare of people. I mean, it's very hard for us from where we're sitting to see how these people in the Senate and in Washington, you know, just you know, they don't fight for what people really want, and to hear a voice like yours, it's so discouraging that more Democrats can't get on the same page. What's going to happen if the what do you think the next tactic of the Republicans is on this Social Security thing now?
Well, clearly their tactic is to get the president out, and the president to say the same big lie over and over again, which is that we're headed for an iceberg, we're headed for a disaster, that Social Security has to be privatized to save it, and all this is completely false. And they'll say it enough times till they finally break through. I think their problem is twofold. Number one, Democrats are united. And in that, I have to take exception with you, because if you listen to these debates, you will hear people really fighting for...
On Social Security, yes.
Well, on a number of fronts, and I'll talk about that. But certainly on this one, which is huge, we are united as never before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Republicans are going to try to break that unity, try to peel us off one from the other. They're not succeeding. As long as privatization is on the table, it means going into debt. It means taking money out of the trust fund and diverting it to Wall Street, giving them a 20% off the top payment. So we are very united, and the Republicans are going to try to divide and conquer, and they're going to follow the 22-year-old playbook that the conservative Cato Institute put out, which is keep telling the people over 55 they're safe. And if you believe that, I've got a bridge I can sell you, because it isn't true. Because to do the privatization, they have to borrow, listen to this, $5.5 trillion on top of the $7.7 trillion we're already in debt.
It's ridiculous.
And for your listeners, I'm going to give them a great factoid they could use at a picnic or a dinner party or at the soda fountain. Are there still soda fountains?
You know, I wasn't going to say anything, but okay, water cooler, that's better.
Now you're scaring me.
That gives away my age. At the water cooler.
Okay, okay.
And this is the $7.7 trillion, which is where we're in debt today, translates into $1 million a day for 21,000 years. That's how much we're in debt.
21,000 years?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what the...
Well,
people play... But they probably will never die in that long a time. They'll have cured death by then.
Yeah, well, with organ harvesting on the way.
But let me ask you a question before, you know, why we still have time. I mean, what about people like Senator Lieberman and Senator Clinton, who seem to think that the tactic is to move sort of to a non-existent center and speak a Republican language? How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, I think it's a generalization to pick a senator and say they're doing this or that. The fact is, you take Hillary, she and I teamed up on the Every Vote Counts bill, which is demanding that we have a paper trail.
Thank you for that, by the way.
Certainly on that bill, it's a Clinton Boxer bill. And
okay.
Then Stephanie Tubbs Jones joined us. So, you know, you can't really say that. And then.
But is there a center?
On Joe Lieberman, Joe Lieberman has always been Joe Lieberman. And
sure.
He's not in the progressive wing of the party. But we need to, this is my own opinion now.
Okay.
You know, and I'm about the most progressive you're gonna find is that if our party doesn't allow people to differ with the progressive view once in a while, we got a problem. And we're not going to be a majority party. What does that mean? It means that we come together as often as we can when it's about the condition of the American family and being the party of hope and opportunity and fairness. once in a while we're going to go our separate ways, and I don't have any bad words for anybody else. They have to be true to their own conscience. But, you know, it doesn't mean you have to like it, and you have a right to express it, and we're all accountable to the people who send us. But we need to come together on those issues where, you know, the American family is threatened, our environment is threatened, our rights are threatened. You know, and one thing I will say with Bush is that, you know, he goes around the world and he says, we're going to bring democracy, we want you to be democratic. But if he doesn't start paying attention to this country and the fact that we've turned our back on so many people, on health care, a cleaner environment,
sure,
many of these issues, pensions and all the rest, people are going to look at us all around the world. You know, they've got the internet. They see. And when they see our people anxious, they're going to think twice before becoming like we become. I think our strongest tool to get people to choose our system is to be the best we can be. And that's where we're really failing.
Well, we're obviously not going to change George W. Bush. That's not going to happen. And hopefully, I mean, how did it feel for you when you stood up with Stephanie Tubbs Jones to bring that that election reform bill out? How did that feel?
I'll say that was a very moving moment.
I mean,
very touching moment.
And that should be one of our primary focuses as well, is to fix this electoral system.
Yes, here we are going around the world, and people are standing in line till 2 a.m. in a college campus here, where they didn't have enough machines. You know, this is crazy. And one precinct had 4,000 votes for George Bush when only 2,000 people voted, you know?
It was crazy.
You know, I had a question. What makes, you know, ultimately I understand everything you're saying, but what makes a compromise so difficult? You know, that bill, the bankruptcy bill, what would make it so difficult to give business whatever it thinks it needs and give the and protect the consumer? Why was it so difficult? Can they just jam it through that way? Incomprehensible.
Well, because they now have 55 votes. And, you know, unless you can get, you know, enough people to stand up against the bill, you need 41. We're nowhere. And
right,
the fact is, the premise of that bill, no one could disagree with it, seriously.
Yeah. Right. No, absolutely.
They refused to make any compromises, and our people felt, you know, they were out there before, they had voted for it before, and they stuck with it. And I was, you know, very disappointed. That's a horrible bill.
Thank you so
much.
We really appreciate everything you're doing. It's great talking to you.
That was Barbara Boxer, myself, and Lewis Black on Randy Rhodes' show last night. Randy will be back Thursday, by the way, for those of you who are wondering. This Thursday, she'll be back. I'll tell you, I really like talking to her. You know, there's a person, you know, Barbara Boxer, you can actually hear her heart on the phone, Riley.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to slamming colleagues in the Senate,
won't do it.
Senators generally don't do that, whether they be Republicans or Democrats. The Senate is supposed to be the, quote, collegial body.
Yeah, let's talk about, there's new news out on the Gannon Guckert scandal as to whether or not it's going to be handled in a legal way, and what's going to evolve out of that. Also, it's a window in to the whole Republican fake news propaganda, media bullying matrix. So we will be back with some of that after this. It's 44 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Nine past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. I've got, there's the fax machine with the liberal agenda. Here's the marching orders for today from the Streisand compound. One, file friend of the court brief seeking leniency for a convicted ex-WorldCom chief Bernard Ebbers because he's a product of his environment. Two, stage sit-down protest in Arctic wilderness to prevent drilling. Pick up shorts and tanning oil at Banana Republic. Three,
file friend of the court brief seeking leniency for Michael Jackson because he's a product of his environment. We're not sure what that environment is, but we're pretty sure it doesn't contain any oxygen. 4. Propose renaming newly discovered species of Idaho fairy shrimp alternative lifestyle shrimp. Why should we deny the rights of shrimp just because they have 10 jointed legs on their thorax, well-developed swimmerettes on their abdominal segments, and a body that's compressed laterally? That's no reason to judge, is it? 5. Today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Now they say vitamin E causes heart damage. First they come for your vitamin E, then they come for your ginkgo biloba. It's a slippery slope. Wake up, sheeple. They're going to take away your green tea gum. Get that. So what's going on with the Jim Guckert, Jeff Gannon, shifty double identity, you know, fake reporter guy who had access to the White House and also apparently there was paid access to his insides. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the military escort?
in a really nasty way I was.
Yes, oh, yes, I'm sure you were. Well, you know, there has been a Freedom of Information Act request.
Hmm.
On behalf of Congress members John Conyers of Michigan and Louise Slaughter of New York. And this is trying to get the government, and specifically the Bush White House, to turn over all credentialing documents in an effort to try and figure out how this clown wound up getting access to the White House for as long as he did.
God, I hope it was because he had some sort of dirty pictures of somebody.
Well, that, that issue is now going to come to a vote today in front of the House in front of the House Judiciary Committee. And, in fact, it's going to be putting both Republicans and Democrats on record about whether or not to force these agencies to turn over Gannon's information. The chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Congressman James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, gave notice at 10 o'clock yesterday that this matter is going to be considered starting at 10 o'clock Eastern today.
Okay.
Now, an aide who was not actually identified here, told Raw Story that the vote was intended to put members on the record as to whether they supported an investigation into Gannon, who they describe as a conservative reporter and male escort.
Yeah.
Wow, now there's a combination for you.
Well, it's strange that they give him the reporter
qualification. Yeah, they gave him the benefit of the doubt on that know he was a male escort.
Yeah, that's for sure. We got pictures on that. There's no real indication that he had any reporting credentials whatsoever. But this is part of the larger problem, Mark Riley, that, you know, I think it's not the tip of the iceberg, but it does represent to me a window into a broader problem. Now, they're also... Yeah, they're holding these secrecy hearings right in the Senate to what is this? Is it to limit more freedom? It's to limit freedom of information requests?
No. It really is a sunshine law into the Freedom of Information Act request procedure. Now, to show you how these two stories connect, Louise Slaughter and John Conyers put in a request under the Freedom of Information Act. The Bush administration hasn't responded yet. Now, what this law that they're taking up in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it was introduced by Republican Senator John Cronin of Texas and Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, what it would do would be to shine some light on the actual tracking of Freedom of Information Act requests. Now, what that means, in plain English, is that this would require agencies to give people seeking FOIA documents a tracking number within 10 days and to set up a telephone or Internet system that allows them to learn the status of their request and the estimated completion date.
So at least you don't just get shut down and you feel frustrated. You actually get a thing that says, sorry, no go, can't have that information, too private.
Well, yeah, and see, this is one of the things that the Senate Judiciary Committee was told yesterday by a retired AP, that's Associated Press executive, that the more you classify, the more you whet the appetite of journalists to try and find leaks to find out what the classified information is.
Let me ask you a question, O'Reilly. Isn't that assuming that there are still journalists with that much integrity and perseverance? I mean, it seems to me that the real problem is, where are the new journalists with any guts? Where are the people that are going to go after those tough stories? And if that's true, I would almost encourage it.
Well, you know, aren't we going to talk to them on Friday? We'll get into that later.
That's right. We have to do an event, you and I, to talk to these college journalists.
College journalists.
About
about this. And to me, this is just the tip of the iceberg, because we had a story yesterday that said the government is going out of its way to reduce access to this info. Even if you look for something online and they give you a Freedom of Information Request receipt and tell you that you can't, apparently outside of people asking about Social Security and Veterans Affairs information, most of the requests that are going through are being denied, you know, because of security, of this
and widespread classification of it. Mark, instead of classifying, you know, specific pieces of information or classifying a specific name within a document or a series of events that they may say compromises national security, instead what they do is classify the entire document.
So dig that. So they're shutting down access. It's been going on. There's a steady decline of availability of information since 1998. It's gotten worse since 9/11, obviously. But they can shut down any of it. They can classify anything. So alongside of that, now we have all these issues of the government administrations and departments releasing fake news reports. All right, they're not stopping that. They're throwing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of in-house produced fake news reports about any number of things: Medicare bills,
Census,
the
agriculture
in Iraq, yeah. You know, and all this stuff goes out to on a wire service almost, and it gets on TV at local affiliate news stations who are too lazy or don't have reporters or too disorganized to do their own work. So it filters out into the world. Now they tried to get this stopped. They tried to say, look, the Government Accountability Office said, you can't do this because if this is going on TV and the viewer doesn't know its origins, then it's illegal. And the government said, look, we put the origins on it. That's on the shoulders of the local producer for the news show. So if he's not doing that, you can't blame us. Dispersal of blame. The information gets out there. And Frank Lautenberg, and he says that we've got to do something about it because taxpayer money shouldn't be being used on this propaganda. And then you just see the power of this, the machine that these guys have in place. You can see it pretty clearly with how they're pushing the Social Security through on TV, on radio, they're organizing things. So the real danger is that these people are shutting down information and they're coercing people through all forms of media and propaganda to believe they want to believe. The game is fixed, Riley.
It's absolutely fixed. But if you want to stop the fix, you might want to go to a website called StopFakeNews, that's one word, .org. They got a petition there that would be sent to the FCC and demand that an investigation into all of this foolishness and the laziness and sloth of many of the news directors that run these television news operations across the country, who don't do the due diligence that they are supposed to do being a licensed entity. Let's get this thing done the right way.
The Republicans do this stuff all the time, man, with their crystal fascist neo-zombie brigade sending 10,000 letters on behalf of three people. I mean, stopfakenews.org. Go to it. Do it.
Yeah, let's
do that. Happen. Let's make some news with you people.
Now, when we come back in the next hour, we're going to revisit an old friend of ours. His name is Tom DeLay. You remember him, man.
Sure I do.
And we got iNews 5000 and much more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley.
Hi!
It's Air America Radio. The power of information. How does it filter into our brains? What is too much propaganda? It's all too much. But how, when do you say, like, oh my God, look at this? And, how do we start to filter this stuff? Because I tell you, I don't read the news that effectively. But you know what? You'd be surprised at how stuff filters into people's heads. Listen to this. It can happen, as we all know, without even suspecting it. I get an email. Love the show. Just wanted to let Mark Maron know that my 13-year-old daughter recently took a state writing assessment here in Oregon, and she, her daughter professes that she adamantly hates talk radio. Okay, so this 13-year-old daughter takes a writing assessment here in Oregon. She chose the creative option. She wrote that while taking out the garbage and realizing that she is not alone, she found herself in a world littered with conformity. This is quoting the kid. Quote, a world littered with conformity, smelly with George W. Bush and his neocon death cult party. It went on, but I felt you should know that you're making a dent in places where it really matters. Kids who are not shy about getting the word out. Thank God. Incidentally, she was scored off topic and did not pass. I say, and I'm a public school English teacher, screw the state. I know what good writing is and an honest message is. Thanks for what you're doing. Now, I just went into almost like a Casey Kasem voice.
You're welcome.
Ponderous.
Hi.
Ponderous, man. But it's great. I mean, it was very exciting that it does filter in. And let's continue talking on these lines, because the power this administration has and the organization they have around dispersing propaganda is mind-blowing, either with taxpayers' money, which should be illegal, and that, I hope that Lautenberg fights that in creating an amendment that will make it illegal for taxpayers to fund stuff that is blatant propaganda, but on the personal, on the 527 level, on private funding, which was, you know, there were limits put on during the campaign, but now it is unlimited, and you have places like Progress for America, that, you know, that are pushing the Social Security plan. And these are places that, I'll just read this for you. Progress for America, the Brigades of Progress for America, which is a front organization,
yes,
to disperse information on Social Security at the behest of the administration. I'm reading from, Yahoo, the Chicago Tribune.
Yes.
Okay, dig this. 7,098 contacts with constituents in targeted districts, participated in 38 radio shows, hired public relations professionals in 20 states with plans to expand to 25, and generated 18 published letters to the editor on Social Security. So they're making up stuff by supposedly real people. This is pure propaganda operations, and these are big. There's a lot of money going into this stuff, and it's a lot to fight, and it's going to take a lot more than sitting in the, you know, on your couch or, you know, in your tub reading George Lakoff's Don't Think About an Elephant. I mean, first you can go to stopfakenews.org, stopfakenews.org, you know, sign the petition, do what these idiots do. I almost said it. Here's another group, okay? This is the Coalition for Modernization and Protection of America's Social Security, Compass. All right, Compass Forces. More than 250,000 telephone contacts in 11 targeted districts. The memo details participated in 41 interviews with local media, placed 200 calls to talk radio shows, mobilized 3,100 advocates to attend town hall meetings with members of Congress, drove attendance at 50 town hall meetings, and placed opinion pieces in newspapers of 10 local markets. Placed opinion pieces. So even if you're reading something and you think it's from a real person, not from a real person. All right, these are organized efforts, and we found this out with Brent Bozell's dumb group. What's it, the parents? What is it? The Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade Parents Council. What is it?
Parents Larson, Resource Council, I believe.
The Brent Bozell's group. I should. Okay. I'll figure it out in a second. But the thing is that they had like 10,000 complaints at the FCC about something, and it turns out, you know, that when it was traced and reported and someone did a little work, that it really came from like three people.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to trust any of it. And now we have this information here. This is just a smaller example, you know, from USA Today, okay? Now this is like, okay, this is a poll, right, Riley?
Yes. This is a poll that was done by an organization called the International Republican Institute, and they do mean Republican.
It's the Parents Television Council. That's Bozell's group.
Yes, Parents Television Council. Now, what this particular organization and
the International Republican Institute.
Yes, the International Republican Institute. They got a poll that says that almost two out of three Iraqis say that the country is headed in the right directions in the wake of the elections. Now, you can quibble with the results of the poll if you want. It's one of seven polls that the organization has done. What is interesting is that USA Today shields this group, the International Republican Institute, from scrutiny by saying in the article, and this is from USA Today, the IRI is a nonpartisan U.S. taxpayer-funded group that promotes democracy abroad. Now, if you talk to some other organizations, particularly organizations that have as their primary concern the Western Hemisphere, for example, the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, they will tell you that the IRI is anything but partisan. Its board is full of Republicans, but
anything but
nonpartisan.
Right.
Their board is full of Republicans, and they also involve themselves. And, you know, there have been accusations that they've involved themselves in both Venezuela and Haiti, the two hottest spots in the Western Hemisphere right now.
So, okay, so there you go. There's a great example. Even if the poll numbers are relatively true, representations of what's going on in Iraq, it doesn't make a difference because the history of this group is that they are a front organization for Republican ideology and Republican agenda, all right? But you have something here in the USA Today that is saying that it is a nonpartisan group, and just by the fact that all 24 of the organization's board members and its president are Republicans, and they include, you know, people that you would have remembered, former Secretary of State under Bush, Bush Sr., Lawrence Eagleburger. You know, you have Brent Scowcroft, who was, you know, obviously a Bush family friend, national security advisor for the first George Bush, and someone who actually doesn't like George W. Bush, apparently, doesn't agree with his
policies.
Doesn't
agree with his policies,
But the real hook here, of course, Riley, is that this is USA Today, you know, probably just, you know, writing off a press release, okay, making a decision, or probably not making a decision, to do what's necessary to represent this as what it is. The International Republican Institute is a Republican institute.
Well, yeah, and see, they say that promotes democracy abroad. Now, when you look at the situation in Haiti, that becomes questionable because there have been widespread allegations and widespread accusations that the IRI backed the two groups that overthrew Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the democratically elected president of Haiti. Now, how can they promote democracy abroad and yet apparently back these two organizations, Democratic Convergence and Group 184? Now, that won't mean much to people in our listening audience, but those are the two groups that were primarily responsible for deposing the elected president of that country.
Yeah,
we're talking
and
about
I
Haiti.
Guess all coups have to have these propaganda support mechanisms, and that's what this is. This is, you know, and how much research does it take? It's the International Republican Institute, all right? And they're saying it's nonpartisan. That's just, but see, this is a little thing. Now, look, I don't, you know, I certainly don't parse the articles as deeply and as well as you do, Riley. And I don't, you know, I am a regular guy. I have to really focus and read a news story, and that would have went right by me. I got to be honest with you. If I was just a regular average Joe, and I'm reading this, okay, in September, 45% of Iraqis thought the country was heading in the wrong direction, and 42% thought it was heading in the right direction. The IRI is a nonpartisan U.S. taxpayer-funded group that promotes democracy abroad. Wouldn't even register with me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even register. But see, that's the catch. Just like the kid, you know, at the beginning of this thing, when I read the email about the kid who wrote in his essay, the girl who wrote in her essay, the neocon death cult,
yeah,
who doesn't even like talk radio, is that stuff starts to filter in, and all of a sudden you got regular people, and by regular people I mean liberals, progressives, people who think properly, you know, saying, you know, Republican talking points. I've done it. I've been guilty of it. We get emails saying, you know, you're using their language. That's because sometimes due to the irresponsibility or because the press is in cahoots with them, the language is right there. It's accepted language with no research.
Well, it also has a ripple effect, Mark, because what will happen now, I think, is that there'll be three or four articles from either Democrats and or progressives saying, well, look, this survey says Iraqis think the country's going in the right direction. That means maybe we have to rethink whether or not Bush did the right thing invading Iraq. We've already seen a couple of those kind of articles.
See, that is the ripple effect, absolutely. Now, if you're tired and fed up of fake news, you know, and the propaganda efforts on the behest of this, on the behalf of this administration, stopfakenews.org.
Yeah.
Go there and get involved. And look, the Republicans do this all the time. We've got to start doing it to have some effect. You know, it's going to take more. It's going to take a little more work than watching a Noam Chomsky video. So when we come back, Tom DeLay makes an apology. Not an apology. Not really an apology.
He hits
but,
back.
Denial is the word that I'm saying. But he's not doing it in front of TV cameras. He's not even appearing. He's only talking to the press because he's scared. And he's having heart problems. But they're not real heart problems. They're the little palpitations that come from being scared. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. If you want to get the truth about the Bush administration's ongoing battle against science and reason, tune into the War on Brains with Mort Milfington on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
I, Mark Maron, will be performing at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco on Friday and Saturday, April 1st and 2nd. You're listening to 960 AM, The Quake in San Francisco. It doesn't matter where you're listening. If you're in the area, come on down. You can go to the tour dates page on morningsedition.com for more info. And, folks, as we've been plugging earlier in the show, you can go to stopfakenews.org, sign a petition to stop the propaganda and pure BS efforts on behalf of this administration to change the minds of the populace by promoting a false reality. Now, getting to the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay. Look, this guy, you know, we talked about him yesterday, and again, I want to speak a little bit to the people that I used to be like, which is like, who's Tom DeLay? I know he's a congressman. He's from Texas, all right? Tom DeLay is a bully. He's a coercive little extortioning ass who has been a political animal for years. He's been in the Congress for years. Newt Gingrich tried to run him out when he was part of a coup to take Newt Gingrich down, and he survived that. He was the guy that redistricted Texas, you know, and chased, you know, he chased half the Democrats, you know, out of the state because they didn't want to vote, and they had to go hide in another state, and he runs the House of Representatives as the majority leader.
Wait a minute, don't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
When the Texas legislature, when the Democrats left,
mm-hmm.
the allegation was that DeLay tried to bring in the Texas Rangers, a government agency, to track these people
down. To go get these guys.
And and ask the FAA to do something to help them track a plane were supposedly
on. Was that basically what you would call a filibuster? Were they trying to stop? And how did that work? Do you know? I mean, they left because they didn't want to
They
vote.
Didn't want to have a quorum in the legislature that
right.
would have forced them to, apparently, to vote on these new district lines that DeLay had engineered.
Engineered for the benefit of Republicans. Now, this guy, DeLay... he has been admonished three times by the House Ethics Committee. DeLay claims that only Democrats are out to get him, but these warnings are approved unanimously by Ethics Committee, which is made up of five Republicans and five Democrats. An ethics complaint filed by the U.S. Representative Chris Bell against DeLay alleges he solicited campaign contributions in return for legislative favors, which is a nice way of saying he took bribes. He laundered illegal campaign contributions through a Texas Political Action Committee and improperly involved a federal agency in Texas partisan manner. This guy's an arrogant little bastard, all right? And he has a plaque on his wall in his office that says, "This could be the day." In reference to Revelations, his right-hand man, his congressional aide, his guy, Buckham, is also his pastor. So, you know, and they,
Reverend Ed.
You know, and this is the type of Christianity that the neocon death cult so deeply sort of backs, you know, this weird sort of Christo-fascist zombie stuff. And then when told to put his cigar out in a restaurant because he was violating the law, the federal government, he responded... I am the federal government. So this is who this guy is. And now there's a quote from a Republican. This is good news, folks, because the animal is starting to feed on its own insides. I mean, who knows who's going to replace him, but this is an anonymous quote from the Washington Post yesterday. All right. Quote, "If death comes from 1,000 cuts, Tom DeLay is into a couple of hundred, and it's getting up there. The situation is negatively fluid right now for the guy." Negatively fluid. "You start hitting arteries, it only takes a couple." End quote.
Now, he is, in fact, responding, and yesterday he responded to these two major allegations. And his response, by the way, was to, on the one hand, blame House Democrats for the problem, and then blame the Washington Post and the media for the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Two trips, England in 2000, South Korea 2001.
Mm-hmm.
There appear to be serious ethics concerns about both trips. In the case of the British trip, it is the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians and E-Lottery Incorporated, which is a gambling services company based in Connecticut, donated the money for the trip through the National Center for Public Policy Research, and DeLay says he only knew it came from the center, not from these two organizations. Now, the second piece, and by the way, not long after he got back, he voted against a bill that ended up helping the Indians and E-Lottery.
Yeah.
Now, in South Korea 2001, $106,000 spent on a trip for DeLay and his peeps to go to South Korea for, quote, educational purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Now they are saying that DeLay should have known that the organization that paid for that trip registered as a foreign agent. DeLay said they registered as a foreign agent 3 days before they left for the trip, so how would he have known? But here's the bottom line in all this.
Yeah.
He's being very clever. He's saying, we want to work with the House Ethics Committee to prove how baseless these and other allegations are. It's a quote from DeLay yesterday, all right?
Yeah, right.
Now, he stacked the Ethics Committee with his own people. He removed the head of the Ethics Committee for censoring him in the past, so he's got his own people on it, and he knows right now that the Ethics Committee cannot function because the Democrats won't let it. So now's a great time to say, oh, yeah, we want to work with them.
Yeah, well, you know, but the thing is, bottom line, right, Riley, he's been admonished 3 times, and now all of a sudden he's going to work with the Ethics Committee. The guy's dirty, all right? It's, even if he has these little outs, like, you know, this 3 days that, I didn't know this, I didn't know that, he's polluted, he's tainted, and it's starting to spill over into the party.
Why should anybody believe that this man had no clue who was funding his trips abroad?
Right, and he's becoming a political liability to his fellow Republicans, which is the way these people eat themselves. Right?
And if he didn't know, what in the world is he doing being the House Majority Leader?
Exactly.
Ask yourself that question, folks, as you're on your way to work this morning.
Apparently having a good time playing golf in England.
Yeah. In Scotland, at St. Andrews, the original
right.
golf course.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I meant.
That's education, folks. Educational purposes.
Exactly.
We're going to come back. We got a whole lot more for you. We've got the Dream Diary. Louis Black is coming up. We're talking a little steroids.
Okay.
A hearing's tomorrow when we come back here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. My earphone just shocked me. Is that possible?
Yeah.
That's weird. Everything, there's so much static electricity in the winter because I think it's so dry. Literally, when I touch my cats, I can see sparks coming off of my fingers. And they don't know what's going on. They're like, hey, what's the, hey, meow. Look, we're going to do the Dream Diary in a second. Today's Dream Interpretation Day, as some of you know. If you guys are itching at the subconscious, if you're itching at the id, to get your dream analyzed by me, get ready to do it, because in the next 7, I'm going to analyze maybe one or two. We've cut the number down. 866-303-2270 is the number, and that's not going to be for a few minutes, but I'm just saying that if you got one that's stuck in your id and you want to get it out, that's the number. We'll be doing that in a second. But right now, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out exactly what they're saying. That's why we got this machine, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline to translator, and we sort of run some headlines through that. So let's do that. From the New York Times, U.S. military says 26 inmate deaths may be homicides. U.S. military says 26 inmate deaths may be homicides. Translation, 99,974 Iraqi deaths still unexplained. Iraqis await 99,974 more explanations. That was just that's a big headline. That's why they didn't put that one on there. Okay, from Fox News, Iraq Assembly sworn in amid explosions. Iraq Assembly sworn in amid explosions. Translation, things in Iraq going pretty much the way you'd expect. From the Associated Press, 18-inch dog swallows 16-inch stick. 18-inch dog swallows 16-inch stick. Translation, Ron Jeremy hits new career low. We got to wait till the last
one.
All right, so let's get back to some real news, Mark Riley, before I do my dream diary. Bernie Evers, going down. Good news. It's nice to see a real, you know, one of the worst corporate criminals go down in such a dramatic way, and I hope it sets a precedent.
He was found guilty 9 counts of orchestrating an $11 billion, that's with a B, dollar fraud. And it really devastated huge numbers of people, stockholders, employees of WorldCom. And it was interesting that one of those employees who lost, by the way, $250,000 out of his 401k when WorldCom went bankrupt back in 2002.
So much money.
250 long, Marin.
Wow.
He said, this is justice. It is not restitution.
Enough said.
But what does that even mean?
That means he's not getting a dime of his quarter mil. That's what he wants.
That's good.
He wants his pound of flesh out of this guy.
I wish these guys could be forced to pay back the people they built.
Well, see, this is what got Bernie Evers in trouble in the first place. Bernie Evers was the high-flying chief executive of WorldCom.
Was it pride?
No, it was greed. Bernie Evers took WorldCom, which was a reseller of phone service based in Mississippi. Small company. Uh-huh. Built it into this huge telecommunications giant in the mid-1990s. And then old Bernie started getting nervous about the value of WorldCom stock. He wanted to make sure it was high and stayed high. Why? Well, because he took out $400 million in personal loans and used as collateral his shares in WorldCom. Which, of course, everybody, you know, you get these options. Everybody gets stock options. That was the currency of the 90s, right?
Right.
You worked in a particular place. Well, rather than paying you out huge cash bonuses, well, we'll give you stock options. And when the price is at $70 a share, you really think you've got something.
Right.
But then when your shares go from $45,000 to $210, like it did for one investor, it's like, what happened? All right. Bernie Evers managed to gorilla his guy. His bookkeeper, Sullivan.
Right.
Scott Sullivan, he's the CFO of WorldCom.
Right.
Into, covering up literally billions of dollars in expenses.
By keeping the number in the same place, by making sure the stock value didn't fall, right?
Making sure the stock value didn't fall, and you did that by, putting revenue on the books that really wasn't revenue.
But the interesting thing about Evers, and same with Ken Lay, the evil thing is that these organizations, these corporations, once they get so big, it's almost like they nurture an environment of mild chaos. So you have these different departments that know the agenda of the corporation, want to, you know, keep the bottom line tight and make as much maximize profits, and they basically say, look, do whatever you got to do. And then they compartmentalize it. You know, do whatever you got to do, that's it. Don't tell me about it. So once somebody gets caught, if everything goes well and the corruption goes well and it pays off for the company, then everything's fine. No one says nothing, right? You get a couple of guys that are walking around with heavy consciences, maybe. But if something does go wrong, then you are able to just, you know, detach that compartment and send them off into space on their own. Sorry, buddy, you screwed up, all right? But it's got to go up to the top, right? And this is the way the government works as well.
Well, this is what happened in Bernie Evers' story, and that's why people like Richard Scrushy from Hell South, Ken Lay, Jeffrey Skilling from Enron, all of these folks must be quaking in their boots now because a jury, and by the way, they spent 8 days reviewing documents to make sure they were right about this.
Right.
They're saying, no, you, chief executive, the guy who runs the company, is responsible. This happened on your watch. If you didn't know, you should have known. And now Bernie Evers is facing anywhere from 30 years to life in prison.
Why don't the American people do this with the damn president? Why don't the American people do it with Donald Rumsfeld? Why don't the American people wake the hell up? This is a jury of your peers. This is a democracy. This country is being run the exact same way as these companies by this president. This is a president that insulates himself from blame by compartmentalizing and saying, look, this is what needs to be done. You guys do it. Don't tell me about it. If someone gets busted being an ass, then it's their ass on the line, and that's the end of the story. And it goes all the way down like that. It's fortunate enough that they got enough non-political grunts to do all this crap work, you know, without having the political, you know, acumen to protect themselves. So they get things done, and they risk, you know, people get sacrificed.
You know who ended up being Bernie Evers' worst enemy at the trial?
Who?
Bernie Evers. He took the stand himself, and the jurors that have been questioned about this after the conviction say that it was Evers' testimony that convicted him. It was Evers' testimony that convinced this jury that he was guilty.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
It is absolutely incredible. It's because pride.
Well, that's the other thing is, of course, this guy, Scott Sullivan, sang like Pavarotti.
Oh, yeah. There you go. He made me do it. All right, so here we go. 866-303-2270. If you have a dream, here's my dream from last night. I'm in a cage, and all I'm wearing is a ripped-up blanket, and I keep worrying that my ass is showing. In the cage next to mine is a group of half-naked, grunting hippies tearing into what looked to be a Middle Eastern combo platter of some sort. I tried to ask them if they could see my ass, but I couldn't talk because my throat had been injured, Riley.
Uh-oh.
In walks a group of apes wearing leather vests. All the humans jump up and start rattling their cages, screaming, "No war for oil! There is no social security crisis! Bush is a fascist!" One guy says, "Save the Northern Pacific Coast!
Boho Salmon. Everyone stops and looks at him for a second, then continues screaming, "This is a police state! Keep abortion safe and legal!" One of the apes has orange hair, and he's wearing an orange leather vest and aviator glasses. A female ape says, "Here are the liberals, Dr. Chanius. They're fascinating. They all have different points of view." And she points at me, "Except for this one. He never says anything. I try to ask him if I look fat, but I can't get the words out." Chania says, "Nonsense. Liberals have no point of view. They just complain about trivial things and defeat themselves. They're insecure, useless life forms. They're worse than poor people. Prepare them all for brain experiments." I try to say, "Hey, wait, I'm a little insecure, but I'm much better than I used to be." But again, no words come out. Dr. Chania leaves. The female ape says to me, "I like you. I'm going to let you out. You have a cute butt. Try to cover it. Now run." So I steal a horse. I ride until I find myself on a beach. Then I see it, Riley, ahead of me. I climb off my horse. I drop down to my knees and I scream, "You finally did it! You really did it, you maniacs! You blew it up! Ah, damn you! God, you all to hell!" And there, half buried in the sand, was a broken down, washed out Whole Foods market. I woke up and my bed was filled with organic sunflower sprouts. Give us your call. Give us your dreams. 866-303-2270. Kim, listening to LIB in New York. What is your dream,
Kim?
Hey,
Kim.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I had a really messed up dream.
Okay, what is it?
Well, I dreamt I was in a mosh pit. And then I said, "This is too noisy in here." So I walked out and I went next door into a clock shop.
Okay.
And then I walked over to a shelf of music boxes, and one was in the shape of FDR's head.
Yeah.
Shaped like a beer stein.
A beer stein?
Uh-oh. And it started talking to me.
Uh-huh.
And told me that dogs can really talk, and if humans ever found that out, it would ruin the relationship between dogs and humans.
Really?
Yep.
That's hilarious.
That was without drugs.
Oh, my God. So why don't you stay on the line? We'll take a break. I'll come back, and I'll try and give you an analysis, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, right. Kim, it's 44 past the hour. We'll be back with dream analysis after this. 866-303-2270 is the number if you want to share your dream. Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
With
hey, it's 49 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
I got Kim on the phone. Kim's had quite a dream. Let me see if I can paraphrase it for you people. Kim was in a concert of some kind in a mosh pit. She left because it was too crazy, too chaotic. She went out into the street. She came upon a clock shop. She went into the clock shop. She came upon a music box shaped like Franklin Delano Roosevelt's head but was also shaped like a beer stein. And the Franklin Delano Roosevelt had told her that not to say anything, that dogs could really understand English, that dogs could speak but don't tell anybody because it would ruin the relationship between people and dogs. Right?
That's it.
Mm. Man. All right, so here, the mosh pit, I think, just really means what it is. It's just chaos, that there is just a sort of community of chaos, that it represents the larger feelings, I think, about the world at large. And you escaped it, went out into a street, you come upon a clock shop. A clock shop is sort of like, to me, it represents like the just you know, obviously time, but not, you know, because it's a shop and because it's full of precious things, I think that it's a good thing. It's not that time is running out, is that there's plenty of time. And I think that the music box, see, music and the fact that you have to open it, that music represents harmony. And FDR, on some level, I'm assuming that you're a Democrat, was, you know, really the greatest authority figure the Democrats have ever known, and laid out some of the greatest social programs this government has ever known. And, you know, and because he's shaped like a beer stein and a music box, inherently, you know, that beer represents a sort of, you know, a happiness, a sort of like, yay, beer, and it's a beer stein. And music represents a sort of harmony. So within Franklin Delano Roosevelt's head and his being and his
his presence in history is this great harmony, this great time of rejoicing. And his secret is that the dog, which represents to humans loyalty, you know, that the loyalty to democratic values, you know, will not go untriumphant, that in a matter of time, we will transcend, we will win if we don't let out our secrets too much and we don't show too much vulnerability. Our secrets are that, you know, that we are right and that we truly care about people, and it's only a matter of time before that will come to pass.
Wow.
Now, Kim,
what do you think of
that? Make that check out to Mark Maron, care of Air America Radio.
I think it's a very hopeful dream. I think that the fact that you left the mosh pit and you found this sort of weird little haven where the message is truly, it's truly a nice message. It's truly a nice democratic message. You know, it's just interesting that FDR didn't want you to tell anybody that dogs can really talk. But, you know, that I think that you must be, do you have any sort of Republicans in your life that you feel like you have to hide your point of view around?
Absolutely not. I'm very unabashed.
Oh, good, good. Ooh. Well, then, it's a very hopeful dream. I hope that, you know, I hope I did something with it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, thanks for calling.
Take care.
Wow.
Wow, man.
Mary,
wow.
You're really getting adept at this.
Sometimes, you know, if I have time to think about it.
Drunken Happiness, FDR.
Yeah,
beer sign.
Yeah, it's in the music box too.
Yeah. Well, right. You know, with the dog, remember the whole, what was that? Wasn't it RCA Victor that had the dog listening to the thing with the big speaker on it?
His master's
voice. There you go. There it is.
All right, let me try this. You know, I'll try one more. Lori, what's your dream, Lori?
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. I had a very weird dream. I'm going to try to go through it quickly because I know there's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
I guess I was at a vet's office, and there was like an office cat that was missing an eye, and they were going to do surgery so that it could have sight restored in its eye. And I'm in a very tiny operating room with a male and female doctor, and somewhere on the when they have the animal on the table, I guess it turns into a dog because it's suddenly bigger than a cat. And instead of repairing its eye, there are these big chunks of bone, two big pieces of bone that look like discs, like maybe 2 inches high, 3 inches wide, mostly bone with marrow inside. I can smell blood. I can hear bones being sawed. And then they are going to be transplanting these discs into the animal's forepaws. At some point, I think the dog changes into a lamb, and then when the operation is over, the animal is lying on its side on the operating table, and I do the absolute worst thing, apparently, and I take it off the table and try to get it to stand. And it's not clear to me in the dream, because this is about where I woke up, it's not clear to me if anybody knows that I did this or if I do it and realize it's a mistake. But obviously not supposed to have the animal stand before the bones are fused.
Wow. Hmm. What are we going to do with that? Oh, my God. So, like, okay, so, you know, you got a cat with one eye in a vet's office, and, you know, the vets are about to work on the cat. And cats are, you know, I think they're sort of ominous in dreams. I think they tend to mean, you know, sort of, you know, bad luck or something foreboding. And here you have these vets who are in a place of authority to take charge and do what they need to do to help the cat. And then the cat turns into a dog, which represents, as I said in the last dream, loyalty. All right? But then they're not going to put the eye back into the dog. They're going to, you know, take these two giant bones.
Yes.
And put that, like, I think that if what I'm you know, that if I'm reading some of these interpretation signs right, that bones represent a certain amount of discovery, like you find buried bones.
Interesting.
You know, and that, you know, that they're going to replace this loyalty with something that was maybe you were hiding from yourself or what you think hiding in the situation. And the weird thing is that it becomes a lamb, which is obviously the symbol of peace on some level, and then there you go to pick up the lamb before the operation, and you know that it's the wrong thing to do, and it's probably going to hurt the lamb. Wow, this is some sort of strange prophecy. It's a very engaging dream, but I think that, you know, you were trying to rush some sort of process of unification, of peace, because of I don't know, why did you feel like you were rushing to get the lamb up?
Well, I didn't feel like I was rushing. I thought that that was the thing to do, but as I did it, I realized it was the wrong thing to do. So, you know, I'm not really sure, you know, I'm still teasing this apart myself, but I'm not really sure why I did that. But, like, as soon as I did it, I had this feeling of, like, oh, my God,
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have you taken any actions lately in your life where you feel like, you know, you've discovered something and you might have put the information out there too quickly and it freaks some people out?
Only in the most minor way, but actually,
wow.
I think that I'm, you know, maybe keeping some information from myself and
right.
revealing that too quickly that I don't want to find out.
Right. So maybe like you're finding some stuff about yourself and that you realize that your peace, like which is the lamb, is being disrupted, and you want to you know sort of you know push you know, want to work through this stuff, but you know you don't quite have the guts to do it yet. Okay.
That's
well, it's a very complicated dream, and I appreciate you sharing it. I feel like I didn't serve you completely, but I gave it a try.
That's okay. I see my therapist tomorrow.
Good. All right, I see mine on Thursday. Thanks for calling.
Take care.
That is tomorrow.
Huh? That is tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to go to my therapist with her dream. That was just so much information. Those kind of dreams are wild, man, where so many different things happen.
Yeah.
And it gets kind of grisly, and there's blood flying and bones flying and animals shifting shapes. Woo! I get excited. I feel like I didn't really do a good job with it. So you want to talk about steroids, but we don't have that much time right now.
Well, we're going to talk about it on the other side of the hour.
Okay, now this is there's going to be a big congressional fight now.
There's a showdown between the Congress and a car salesman.
Wow.
The car salesman, of course, is also the commissioner of baseball, Bud Selig.
And some people think that, you know, that this is a witch hunt.
Well, yeah. And then some people think... apparently, that there's a big problem with steroids in baseball. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And, of course, Lewis Black, who was with you yesterday.
He'll be
with
me again today.
Yeah.
We'll go over what we did.
He's resilient.
Yeah.
Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Air America Radio.
Do you know where you're...
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians. Well, I don't know. What am I going to say, Riley? I'm going to be at Cobb's Comedy Club, April 1st and 2nd in San Francisco. Come see me. But, you know, I'm obsessing. We just had our dream analysis segment. I just talked to her. I think her name is Lori. She had a dream that she was at a vet's office. They had a cat there, and the cat had one eye, and they were going to replace the eye, right?
Yep.
But then all of a sudden, like, you know, the cat turns into a dog, and they're going to... There's two big shards of bone they were going to replace the eye with, all right? And then all of a sudden it turns into a sheep, and she, like, wants to rush the operation, you know? And she wants the sheep to get up and go, but she felt like it was too soon. And I think I analyzed it the wrong way, because I say this every day. I say, wake up, sheeple, right?
Yeah,
sheep. Sheep means conformity, dude. Sheep means, you know, status quo, going along with the rest of them. I think that what Lori was doing, and if you're still listening, you got me all going here. One-eyed cat means that you were committed and myopic and sort of stubborn about your misfortune and your bad luck and your life wasn't going the way you wanted. So then all of a sudden you have this discovery. Here comes the doctor, shows you these, he gets these bones out, which means there's a discovery that you found inside of yourself. And then the dog means that, you know, you they're going to put it into the dog, which is loyal. So you're going to, you know, you're going to be introduced to this truth about yourself, and you want to rush the situation so you could just get on with it and be a normal person and be part of the regular people and be part of the flow and just get lost and not have all this burden on you of this discovery. It'll happen. I think it was a therapy dream, Lori, and I think that therapy is working. I hope you're still listening. Isn't it crazy? Like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but like on the break, I'm like, oh, sheep, of course. Wait, like, we got bigger things to talk about. Tell me about steroids, Riley.
Steroids.
Yeah.
Front
What's
page.
Going on? What is going on? Because we talked
Front
about this
burner.
Before,
yeah.
And you've been sort of like locked into it because you're like, the other day you're like, all right, here we go. Now it's going to be Congress against baseball.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Now, there have been some very interesting developments this week with regard to the steroid issue. We should let the audience know, first of all, that tomorrow... Bud Selig and others from baseball, including possibly Donald Fair, who is the head of the Baseball Players Union, are scheduled to testify before a House committee investigating steroids.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, there are two players, one current, one former, who have already said they would testify. One is Jose Canseco, who wrote the book that alleged that everybody from, you know, Mark McGuire to George W. Bush was involved somehow in the steroids.
Aren't they?
all involved.
Aren't they all?
Somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. You play baseball, you take steroids. That's it.
Well, we've talked to baseball fans who are like, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, Curt Schilling is the other one. He said over the weekend that he would, in fact, go and testify. Yesterday, Jason Giambi, slugging star for the New York Yankees, was excused from testifying. That may well be because he already submitted grand jury testimony in the Balco case, which is the smoking gun of the steroid situation.
Which is what? What was that case?
The Balco case was about a place out in the Bay Area of California, run by a guy named Victor Conti, who was one of the founding members of the group Tower of Power.
Yeah.
And it is alleged that he procured and distributed steroids, and in fact helped develop a steroid that
undetectable, right?
That was undetectable.
Now
yes.
Let me ask you something, right? As we talk about this, because me, not a sports fan, you know, don't mind it. I'm not, you know, against sports.
Mm-hmm.
But how does this case apply to the things that we're used to talking about on this show?
Well, what it is it has really kind of gotten people, both the pundits and the sports people, on both sides of a divide about whether or not Congress should even be involved in conducting these hearings in the first place.
Okay.
Some people think that the Congress is just grandstanding, that they want to get some high-profile baseball players to come down there and testify and therefore be able to tell their constituents, hey, I'm doing something about steroids. From the player's perspective.
Grandstanding is a funny word when you use it like that when it has to do with getting baseball players into Congress. So
yeah.
They get to be the grandstand. We get the best seats in the
house.
In
the house, right in the witness chair. Yep. Now, the flip side of that is that the players themselves are very nervous about having to testify about steroids under oath in a public situation. Because remember, this is going to be a congressional hearing.
Right.
And what the players fear is that some congressman, and it probably is true, on that committee is going to say, did you, Sammy Sosa, or Mark McGuire, or some of the Rafael Palmeiro, some of the other players that have been subpoenaed, did you take steroids, or to what extent do you know about steroid use? Major League Baseball, in the most general sense.
Have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
There you go. And they're deathly afraid that bringing this large number of superstars from baseball in front of a public committee to talk about this will tarnish the image of the game. That's why earlier this week, Major League Baseball turned over about 400 pages worth of documents about the league steroid policy to the committee. They had asked for that. And then now they have been negotiating back and forth about which players will actually show up. At one point, Major League Baseball and the Players Union jumped up and said, well, Congress doesn't have jurisdiction. And then you know what happened? Congress started talking about baseball's antitrust exemption. Yeah, baseball has an exemption from America's antitrust laws.
Okay.
That's why they are able to do some of the things they're doing in terms of the movement of players and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, why don't you explain to me what that means, Riley, antitrust laws in this case?
In this instance, baseball essentially has a monopoly.
Okay.
All right? Major League Baseball has a monopoly on the game.
You mean I can't start Mark's Baseball League?
You could, but you wouldn't have the same kinds of exemptions that Major League Baseball does. See, people have challenged Major League Baseball in the past around the question of whether or not they, in some way, shape, or form, take advantage of players because Major League Baseball is the only game in town.
Okay. So this is the case you're saying to me, and let me try and understand this, is that this is really an issue of, the issue of rights, of privacy, that does Congress have the right to invade these players' privacy, you know, either force them or to take urine tests or to check records of their urine tests over a series of years to make an indictment of the game of baseball? Or do they just, pass legislation, outright prohibiting steroids without the big show of invading these players' rights? But there's already laws, right, that prohibit steroid use.
There are laws that prohibit steroid use, and Major League Baseball has adopted a, quote, tougher, unquote, steroid policy over the last couple of years as more and more steroid use had come to light. They did a survey, they did a test, actually, a couple of years ago, that said about 5-7% of the ball players they tested were tested positive for steroids. They never named the players, though.
Right. Is there a fear that a precedent will be set that will enable the government to, require that we submit, drug tests in the general public sense? I mean, what is the fear of this investigation in terms of freedom?
The fear in terms of freedom, see, because there are two fears. One is a fear that the game will lose money. That's the big fear.
Right.
The fear about freedom has to do with whether or not the government should be involved in testing this specific sport. Because remember, this is not the only sport. Bodybuilding, football, all these other sports have had allegations of steroid use as well. They haven't called all those folks.
So the question is, does the government have the power to invade sports for this particular reason?
Yeah, and we're going to find out the extent to which Congress is serious on this matter. Remember, we talked to Sam Rosenfeld this week.
Right.
He said Congress is deadly serious about this.
And
we'll see.
And then I guess the broader implications is, will sports become a slippery slope to just anything? Will it lead to the workplace? Will it lead to high school sports? Will it lead to just getting in your car? I mean, who the hell knows? This is one of those things.
It's one of those things, and that's what scares them about Balco, because that masks the testing.
Okay, we'll be back with the War on Brains. It's 14 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil.
In 3 hours or less,
Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm into the David Byrne.
Yeah, I know. I didn't hear the place where you usually said hi. Went right by, and you were just dancing over there. For some reason, it looks like the steroid thing is taking some traction here with some people on the phone. So, I'm going to take a call after we do after we listen to the War on Brain. So 866-303-2270 if you're festering about this in some way. But, every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the five-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Mount Olympus, home to shining Hephaestus, made weak and lame by deregulation and lead poisoning, and proud Mercury of the winged feet, who, when threatened by evildoers, can morph himself into a silver liquid that kids on my street used to play with until my parents found out it was making my brothers retarded. This week saw true pronged offensive by Bush forces against both the environment and the Homo sapien neocortex, Earth's two greatest sources of freshwater cod and pornography. For yesterday, March 15th, 2005, a day that will live in infamy, the human brain was suddenly and deliberately attacked by the corporate and lobbying forces of the empire of George W. Bush. Unprovoked. Dastardly. In this shameful onslaught, the EPA, or as I like to call it, the empowering polluter a-holes. Yeah, I still got it. Issued regulations increasing the amount of mercury America can heave up from the diseased bowels of its industrialized heartland and spew into the gaping maws of its hulking, ineffectual proletariat.
Yeah.
Not since Ray Kroc introduced his diabolical filet-o-fish sandwich has man faced this high a threat from mercury poisoning, nor this high a potential for gratuitous filet-o-fish sandwich jokes. Under the new rules, utilities can now buy credits to release more mercury into our air and drinking water. Companies like Pacific Gas and Mercury, Consolidated Edison Mercury, and of course, your local Ford Lincoln Mercury dealer.
Yeah.
Shut up.
All right.
Yes, mercury. Its names are legion. Quicksilver, liquid steel, robot spunk.
Oh.
Anyway you drink it, it's still poison. Sure, it goes down like velvet and can really take the edge off after a hard day at the office. But our superhuman strength, erections on demand, and the ability to hear what other people are thinking, really worth the resulting brain damage, insomnia, and of course, madness? Even the EPA acknowledged these increases, which it calls reductions, will not be fully reached until sometime after the year 2020, or when we're all so demented, we can't even notice the glaring lack of story continuity on Fox's Nip Tuck. I mean, Bobolit slashes Dr. Troy's face and it's not even referenced in the very next episode? No scars? Nothing? Come on! If I ever get to the point where that kind of inexcusable laziness doesn't bother me anymore, I want you to kill me. I, for one, will do my part to protest these new rules on mercury emissions by constructing a free-form postmodern sculpture out of my melted-down collection of rare vintage rectal thermometers. Until then, freedom fighters, stay away from fish sticks and don't listen to Queen. It's got mercury in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's today's, yeah. And that's today's dispatch from...
The War on Brains.
Wow, you still do have it, man. That was good stuff. Good stuff, Mort.
Wonderful.
Thanks a lot for that condescending comment.
I'm being serious. You know, you took a vacation. We ran some best ofs last week. We played you and your whole damn family. I missed you, but you can't take a compliment. Got to throw it right back in my face. Have some fish.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember the first time you saw mercury in science class and you touched it and it broke into a bunch of little mercury balls and then you kept doing it and kept touching it and touching it and touching it?
I never touched mercury.
Never, ever?
Never, never.
Do you ever eat fish?
Never.
Oh.
Never?
I don't eat fish. I only eat soy.
Yeah.
Soy fish?
I'm going online to see if there's something wrong with soy.
Yeah,
I'll
right.
talk to you in a second. Thanks right. for coming by.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you're back. Say it again.
Good. Not me.
Yeah, okay. Say whatever again.
I want to go back to the Catskills.
Oh, no. Is that where you work?
Well, that's where your people work.
Ooh. All right.
What?
All right.
What?
Like, get out.
Like it's not known?
Get out. I want to take some callers. It's great talking to you.
Suddenly you have taste.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. All right. You know, you can't take the love. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Get out. Nice talking to you. Michelle in Norway. Isn't that great in Norway?
Norway.
They have lots of fish. I'm assuming a lot of mercury in the fish up there.
Hi, no? Michelle.
I don't want to know.
You don't want to know.
Hi, good morning, guys.
What's on your mind?
I wanted to throw, in addition to what Riley said about the congressional hearings and bringing in baseball players and talking about steroid use, I think there's this is a lame attempt by Congress to do something like protect a national pastime. Baseball is supposed to be like the national pastime, and everyone associates baseball with apple pie and America, blah, blah, blah. So I think for some people it's considered part of American heritage. So,
okay.
To have baseball's image tarnished by the use of steroids is perhaps a bit threatening.
I think that's probably
lawmakers.
That's probably
and
pretty
I think
good.
They don't even realize that that's what they're doing. They don't see that they. It's more about image and it's about controlling like the national patrimony, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, now so it's patrimony.
They
yeah.
They want to defend baseball.
I get it. Okay. Thanks a lot, Michelle.
That's what I want to say. Thanks.
That's an interesting
right,
call.
Thanks,
yeah,
Michelle.
She's talking about the symbol of baseball.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was. You know, it became sort of. I wonder if. She made it seem like a bad thing, you know, towards the end of that conversation. Patriarchy, I think, or patrimony. It wouldn't be patrimony. It would be patriarchy.
It would be
it?
Patriarchy. But see, what she's talking about is something that people do have to look at here. In 1994, when they canceled the World Series, baseball was at its low ebb. They weren't sure that fans were going to come back when they started the following season. And then you see the period from about 96 through 2000 was the period when all of these records started falling by the wayside. Suddenly, 60-some-odd home runs by McGuire,
right.
73 home runs by Bonds. All of a sudden, all of these records begin to get broken, and that's when people started looking at whether or not some of these athletes, I mean, they started talking about juiced-up baseballs and that,
right.
But they also started seeing people gain huge amounts of weight, more muscle mass and all of that, and they started concluding it was steroids.
Yeah, let me just take this quick call. John, quickly, we only got a second.
Hey, John.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I think it's either a very clever smokescreen or sheer idiocy.
Idiocy.
I mean, look at this. They've got Enron. They've got... mercury,
right.
Like you were saying, they've got an outed CIA operative, and they choose to investigate baseball.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, this same subcommittee
thanks for your comment.
Has not investigated the Bush administration's claims about the war in Iraq.
Yeah. Quickly, Steve, what do you got?
Real quick. I mean, the implications of baseball's exemption from antitrust are huge. If baseball is considered a monopoly. It can be regulated. It can be broken up. You can subject the salaries of the players to
interesting.
Pure free market forces.
All right, thanks a lot, Steve. We got to go.
That's
a good point. A lot of good points. But I think that the fans don't mind the steroids, so I'm wondering about the symbol argument.
That may be a very good point. When we come back, Lewis Black makes several very good points here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. I will be at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco April 1st and 2nd. You can go to morningsedition.com and check the tour dates page for details if you're listening out there on the Quake, 960 AM. Come on down, or come on down if you're going to be visiting. Just come on down. And also, I just got an email from the woman whose dream I reanalyzed because of my own strange insecurity, as if it's a profession of mine. And she said, thanks for the second dream interpretation, Mark. I think it's closer to what's going on with me, and I appreciate your encouragement, too. P.S., my therapist is going away for 2 weeks. Care to fill in for her? I can't say that I'm... I, you know, I've been to therapy long enough that I could probably do it just fine, but I feel unqualified. On the phone right now from The Daily Show, from last night with me for 3 hours. What the hell could we have to talk about, Lewis Black?
Well, now that you opened the Pandora's box of your dream interpretation.
Dude, it's my new job.
Look, you're not qualified. I know you well enough.
Are you kidding? I've traveled there. I've done the big journeying in my head. I've seen all the symbols and archetypes in my id.
Yeah, and so, and I've seen them in mine, but I can't apply them to anybody else.
Well, that's what the entire therapy industry is built on, this weird speculation that they can somehow understand your deep, dark secrets. You've never been to therapy, Lewis?
Oh, of course I have.
And what happened? Is that where you started the entire... did you ever yell at your therapist?
No, my therapist is really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just give her a lot of stuff, though. I go in and go, you are so lucky to have me, because I'm just... You know, because I consider that I don't like call up and go, you know, I can't get out the door today.
Right.
You know, I'm ready. I'm one of those guys like going, you know, I should really only pay cheaper because my stuff is really less. It's nuts, but it's not crazy nuts.
But you show up with like an outline. You understand that when you go to a therapist, if you know what you want fixed, it's a lot easier to get something done. You're not hiding anything.
Exactly.
Right. But, you know, I got to tell you something. You know, I sat with you for 3 hours. You know, you're not fixed yet.
Is that what Barbara Boxer said?
Yeah, we had a nice chat with Barbara Boxer.
It was very good.
All right, tell me, how was it, you know, when I left? It was sad for a minute, right? You had an hour more to do what you need.
I know. I had withdrawal.
Ah, see, a little Mark withdrawal. I knew that. So, dude, are you a sports guy?
So, yeah, I'm just filling out my NCAA bracket.
What do you think of this steroids issue? Are you pro-steroids, against steroids? Should Congress have a right to dictate who uses them, who doesn't?
Yeah, somebody's going to have to do something because baseball just not easy. It doesn't even deal with it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, Congress should have a right to go, come on up here.
But isn't there some party that just wants to see all these mutants on the field, you know, smacking home runs? And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
no, well, exactly. But it's like...
Flying.
Ultimately, it becomes wrestling.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, it just becomes not right.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you look at them, you know, after they stop taking them and they return to normal.
They deflate?
Yeah, exactly.
And people start calling them little man again?
Yeah, but they just kind of, it's unbelievable. It's like they're, you know, it's like somebody, it's like blow-up doll.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because steroids seems to be a response to the fact that in baseball, you know, hitters fail better than 70% of the... If you fail 70% of the time, you're considered a great hitter.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, and remember that there are very few pitchers who the steroid issue has touched at all. Kurt Schilling is about the only one, and he's going to testify.
Yes.
Pitchers don't use steroids.
No, because they're too busy taking speed. Just need to be focused.
Focused. Got to keep it clear. Who was it that pitched a no-hitter on acid?
Doc Ellis. Hit the first two guys he pitched against and then pitched a no-hitter.
Yeah. It was wasn't it Fergie Jenkins?
No. Was it Fergie or Doc? I thought it was Doc.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, both of them played on the same baseball team at one point, the 1975 Boston Red Sox, which they had a group of them together, including Bill the Spaceman Lee,
yeah,
who openly admitted to marijuana use. I mean,
right.
Just said, I don't have a drug problem. I just call my dealer. There's no problem.
Yeah, he comes when I need him, and
yeah.
I get what I need.
And they had a group of guys that called themselves the Buffalo Heads on that particular team, the 75 Red Sox. I think Dick Drago was involved with it, too. But these guys were like nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely off the charts. And all of them were out of baseball inside of like 2 years or so.
Who are your teams, Lewis?
Baseball, I now have the Washington Nationals. How sad is that?
Whoa!
And the Baltimore Orioles, and if you put them together, you wouldn't have a baseball team.
Is Frank Robinson still managing the Nationals?
Yeah.
Yeah. He went to sleep on a game last year.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Bring the baseball back to Washington. Let's do it a third time. Let's bring, you know, and next time let's just bring in corpses.
Oh, jeez. I remember, you know, I'm old. Lewis, I'm old enough to remember the Washington Senators, and I remember a guy, there was a guy named Camilio Pascual.
Wow, yeah.
Pitched for the Washington Senators. The guy would have season. He was a good pitcher.
Yeah,
but,
he was good.
But the team was so bad, his record would be like 8-20, 9-18. 6-14. Every year, the guy would have a losing record. And he'd pitch a no-hitter during the course of the year. It's just nobody ever hit behind.
Yeah, and that's also the, you know, and back then, they if they had a Spanish ball player, they didn't bother to teach him English.
Wow.
I feel like a woman.
They were awful. Then I've lost two teams.
Yeah.
You know, they took away the first centers, and then I had one of the great moments in sports. They trade away the second baseman, the third baseman, the shortstop of the next team, and they trade him for Denny McLean, who has a coke problem that makes our collective coke problem look like a vacation. Like Bernie's day at the beach. This guy did so much blow that at the end of 12 games, he was 0-12. And we traded away our team for him. And then the next year, they were gone. Huh? And it was our fault for not going to the stadium.
So did you ever play any sports, Lewis?
I just, I played all of them, but I'm not on the, you know, I never made the big teams.
No, you never made the majors, no kidding.
No.
Yeah. Played varsity, though, huh, Lewis?
When we talked last night, you know, the last day I left off with the history of Lewis Black was in 1969 eating lentils at Yale.
Yes.
Yeah, so how did you...
I was at UNC then. Then I was at Chapel Hill.
Oh. So you were like a hippie in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Was that cool then?
Oh, it was phenomenal. 24-hour day, it was the greatest thing, it was the greatest experience of my life. It was a 24-hour, you could either study or party in any 24-hour period, at any time.
Now, when you were in North Carolina, were you part of the anti-war movement? I mean, 69, were you part of the momentum, the social momentum, the cultural change, Lewis?
This will give you an idea.
All right.
I was involved in the organization of strikes and stuff. And when the last strike occurred, which is just before I graduated in '69, all the schools shut down in the country. And I said, listen, the University of North Carolina Greensboro, which had all the women, 5,000 women, I said, could you guys, why don't I go over there and organize them? And that was when I knew that I wasn't a true believer.
Wow. You had ulterior motive.
Well, it was kind of, I said, I'm killing two birds with one stone.
And how'd it go? Did you were able to organize
any? No, they wouldn't strike. They wouldn't strike, and I didn't get any.
Yeah,
it was perfect.
They wouldn't strike, and somebody get the Jew off the campus.
Exactly.
Wow.
Who let the guy on the campus with the Birkenstocks and the granny glasses?
Yeah, but that was a great thing. But it was a great time down there because you could meet a girl who would say, this is really great because I've never met a Jewish man before. It was heaven.
Wow. Really?
Oh, yes.
But would any of them actually sleep with you?
Yeah, on the 50-yard line.
Oh, come on.
I'm serious. It was one of my greatest moments.
Yeah, what? Yeah,
Late at night, going to the football field, 50-yard line.
Yeah, with a Southern girl.
With a Southern girl who'd never met a Jewish man before.
Oh, and you say you don't play sports.
Hey. I'm a 50, huh?
That's serious.
That's some Animal House action, man. They had that in that movie.
That must have been pretty glorious.
That was tremendous.
Oh, man, the old days, right?
That and being touched by another girl while we were in astronomy lab.
Wow.
They had a planetarium. And they turned off the lights, and it was like, oh, it's nighttime. And usually I'd sleep, but one day I found some woman's hand in my pants.
And you're like, oh, my God, look at that. It's Orion.
Yeah, really. I nearly flunked that course.
But it was worth it, right, Lewis?
It was certainly worth it.
So,
and I certainly didn't need it to do this for a living.
To
get up in the morning and talking about having sex in the planetarium.
Exactly. Oh. And anybody would be interested.
You're
that's
living
the
your
great part.
Well, that you know, we're not. I'm interested. I'm finding it very engaging. So you want? Maybe we'll take a break and come back and talk about politics.
Yeah, let's look at. But yeah, because you know that thing today on the front page of the Times where they. Where they said that the U.S. lists possible terror attacks.
Well, you hold that thought, and we'll come back in a second. It's 44 past the hour. We're talking to Lewis Black, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Coming in for landing here, 48 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We've got Lewis Black on the phone. I'm looking at the paper right now, Lewis, is what you were talking about. U.S. report lists possibilities for terrorist attacks and likely toll.
Perfect, yeah.
What the hell is this? What, we needed this?
This is good. It's good that, you know, it's good. And this it wasn't supposed to be a public document.
No.
But it was inadvertently posted on a Hawaiian state government website. We're really good. We're really good at keeping our secrets. Why don't we say how we're going to defend ourselves? It's like the Dallas Cowboys handing out their playbook. What is the matter with us?
Yeah, look at this list, though. It's like, it might as well just be like, if you're looking for new ideas, you know, if you're a terrorist, and we got some ideas here.
Yeah, but how much Maui Wowie does it take to post that? Oh, yeah, that'll be good. Let's get that up. How do you inadvertently post something? That would require you to type it. They don't even get the work done normally.
I didn't even realize that. That's incredible. But this is frightening, man. It says it's like, okay, the things that we got to be worried about, that the national planning scenario.
Yes.
All right. Killing, okay, a chlorine tank. Blowing up a chlorine tank.
Good idea.
Yeah, killing 17,500 people, injuring more than 100,000.
I didn't know pools had that much chlorine.
Yeah, right. Spreading pneumonic plague in bathrooms of an airport. Now, first you got to get the plague. You got to find the guy who's willing to get the plague, and then have him run around the bathrooms rubbing himself on faucets and things. Is that what that is? Yeah, which is easier to find. That happens all the time. So my mother used to tell me. All right. So how about this? How about this? Infecting cattle with foot and mouth disease. Now you got to get a guy. What is that, in a jar? Is it like foot and mouth disease, and he's got to go sprinkle it on cows? These are not very impressive ones, I don't think. What do you think, Lewis?
No, I don't think they're, you know, it doesn't even begin. They're not going to do anything that we think they're going to do.
That we suggest they do from our postings on blogs that shouldn't be posted.
You know, it's like we don't, you know, it's not like we do this for a living. We're basically not a people who are, we terrorize each other in other ways, like the Weather Channel. Things like that.
Yeah.
But we're not really conscious terrorists, so we don't come up with stuff that they would think of.
But you know what? This is not just creating terrorist scenarios for the sake of doing so. This is about money, as so many other things are in our lives, and how government spends money. They use these different scenarios to start identifying how much and how many federal dollars are going to be distributed to various places across the country.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know that, well, initially when the Homeland Security money, when they started dispersing money, you know, per capita, what was it, that each state got the number, the amount of money that it required. Like
Wyoming got $30 a person, New York got $550.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous. So Wyoming has this, like, tremendous, like, this supersonic vehicle that can survive a nuclear explosion, and we can't even fix our roads here.
Yeah.
But the good thing is we'll get more money now, which will allow them to build their stadium, I guess. That's probably what this is about.
It's all about the stadium?
It's all about the stadium.
So where are you going next, Lewis?
Tomorrow, Friday, I go to Buffalo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not cold enough here. And then Detroit. Then Hamilton, actually. Hamilton, which is down from Toronto.
Wait a minute.
Colgate University?
After what you all said about Detroit yesterday, you're going to Detroit?
Oh, but my friend who did most of the comments is on first, so he's going to take the hit.
So last night we talked to your opening act, John Bowman, who lives in Michigan, who read a list of things that are wrong with Detroit in a fairly insensitive manner, I might add.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's on first, huh?
Yeah. So are you frightened when you
travel ever, Lewis? Have you gotten past that?
Yeah, I'm totally. I don't care. What are they? Yeah. You know, like I think, wow, you know, it's you know, I'm not going to have to wake up tomorrow and do this. Perfect.
What about
except for you know going through you know dealing with homelands you know dealing with transportation security.
Yeah,
that just drives me nuts.
Like how?
No, they're taking off my shoes. Okay, stop it. Please.
I'm Lewis Black from television.
Well, it settles that. You've been watching it. You know, no, it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
As actually my friend John Bowman said, okay, the first wave of this group of guys who became so trained that they could drive planes, you know, and do insane damage.
Yeah.
And the second stringer is a guy getting on a plane who's got who has a bomb in his shoes.
Right.
Okay, that's the second string.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen again.
Right.
Okay? Nobody's going to put stuff in their shoes.
Yeah, now it's just going to be a guy that stands up and yells things.
Now it's just going to be or takes a dump on a cart.
That already happened, but not for terrorist reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy was just having a good time.
He'll be dumping something that he's going to have something terribly wrong with.
He might have hoof and mouth disease he's going to dump. He might just blast it. The cabin with some pneumonia.
You know, my favorite is they still take people out of line. I'm still watching them have, you know, I saw a 10-year-old girl and they were going through her little kitty bag.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there with a guy in, you know, we're standing there and the guy, and it's like, you know, it's a 10-year-old girl who redefines Protestantism. And, you know, and we're looking at her and I said, you know, that's ridiculous. And he said, well, you never can be too sure. I said, I'm sure. I am sure she's you can pass her. Even if she's carrying, a scythe in her little kitty thing.
Scythe.
You know, they got a list. These guys at Homeland Security, the TSA guys at the airport, they have a list of things that trigger them to pull you out of line. My wife got pulled out of line twice when we went to England over the Christmas holidays because she had a British passport and she was traveling with myself and my daughter, both of whom have American passports.
Oh, it's one of those things that they, you know, they have a Hello Kitty shirt and they're like, you know, they're seven?
Yeah.
I mean, what, they take that kid's plastic scissors
away? If the
away?
Kid is on a different passport than his parents, they're going to pull the kid out.
Because the kid might be a kid bomb. Have you ever heard of the kid bomb?
Yeah, that's it.
Kid bomb.
It's a little kid bomb. I'm down two nose hair scissors and like three nail clippers from this damn thing. All right?
And
I want my
$6.56
back.
Yeah, and they're going to take away the lighters. That's next.
Yeah.
What? Do you not set yourself? Your self-immolation a problem?
Exactly. Yeah. I thought the inside of the plane was supposed to be fireproof.
Yeah. You know, it should be. It isn't. Now I'm worried.
Well, you know.
I don't know. You know, I'm looking to fly out to L.A. this week. I'm not afraid of it either. I'm not afraid of terrorists, but takeoff's that's a problem for me.
No, that never bothers me.
Nothing ever bothers. What are you afraid of, Lewis?
Not when I fly. I fly so much.
You can't be afraid. You can't afford to. It's draining.
Huh?
It's draining to be afraid of flying when you fly constantly.
Yeah, no. It made me, for the first 3 or 4 years, it made me crazy.
Right.
And then it was like, what difference does it make?
You have to do that. Literally, the reason why you stop being afraid of flying is you just don't have the energy to do it anymore.
Exactly.
You get exhausted. Well, be careful. It was great talking to you, Lewis.
Always a pleasure, guys.
I had a good time with you last night. Take it easy.
Thank you, and have fun in San Francisco.
Thanks a lot, man.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
That's great to talk to him. We had a good time last night.
Yeah, you did. It sounded good, too.
He's a good guy. He was really awake this morning, too. I'm surprised. Well, there we go. There's the liberal agenda from the Barbara Streisand compound from the fax machine. Here are your marching orders for today. One, file friend of the court brief seeking leniency for convicted ex-WorldCom chief Bernard Ebbers because he's a product of his environment, Riley. Environment. Two, stage sit-down protest in Arctic wilderness to prevent drilling. Pick up shorts and tanning oil at Banana Republic. Three, file friend of the court brief seeking leniency for Michael Jackson because he's a product of his environment, Mark. We're not sure what environment, but we're pretty certain it doesn't contain any oxygen. All right. Four, propose renaming newly discovered species of Idaho fairy shrimp, alternative lifestyle shrimp. Why should we deny the rights of shrimp just because they have 10 jointed legs on their thorax, well-developed swimmerettes on their abdominal segments, and a body that's compressed laterally? Why do we judge that?
Uh-huh.
Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Now they say vitamin E causes heart damage. First they come for your vitamin E, then they come for your ginkgo biloba. It's a slippery slope. Wake up, sheeple. They're going to take away your green tea gum.
Uh-oh.
What do we got tomorrow?
Tomorrow we
Quinto
got...
Baloba. What did I say,
yeah.
Balboa?
Balboa.
Balboa? Hey, Adrian! Yo, Adrian!
We got Terry Jones tomorrow.
Oh, that's going to be great for Monty Python.
For Monty Python. Have a good one.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With a reason. This is Air America Radio.